You're listening to 90.3 Near FM. It's Northside Today, Johnny here, and that was KC and the Sunshine Band with Give It Up. Now, for General Election 2020, only 2 days away from voting time, this coming Saturday. And I'm now joined here in studio with Pronchius O'Connoran from AN2 Dublin Bay North constituency to talk about his election campaign. Good morning, Pronchius, and thank you very much for coming in to us.
Good morning, Johnny, and thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. First of all, Pronchius, tell us how your campaign has been going so far. What kind of reaction you've been getting, you know, from the locals during your door-to-door visits?
I've been getting a great reaction. What I feel out there is that the vast majority of people are disillusioned with the politicians and with the government and the way this country has been run. And they're looking for change, and they're looking for big change. But you don't know who to turn to. And we, as a new party, AN2, which Pat O'Toole, we offer them real change and real alternative to the existing government. And we hope that people will think outside the box and vote for AN2 and put us in a position that we can make a huge difference. Even if we're a small party can make a difference in Dáil Éireann.
Okay, and housing and homelessness appears to be number one concern for the majority now of our population at this time. Tell us about your views on what action is needed to address the national housing emergency.
Well, it just beggars belief that the government is continually dragging the heels on homelessness. They don't seem to see it as a problem. They seem to just put up with it. When they go to the property developers and all this and look for social housing to be built, and they're dismal failure on building social housing. I mean, it's a track record with them now. It's just they push it down further down the road. Instead of, the county councils have vast tracts of land, and if the private developers cannot provide social housing, the government should stand up. They represent the people. They should instruct the county councils to build, start a national building programme run and financed by the government for the people of Ireland, and build social housing and build the numbers that we need to house our people. It's a God-given right that we should be building social and affordable housing and not leaving it up to the private enterprise that will rip us off and have been doing so with the prices.
Would you agree that Minister Murphy was completely out of touch with the reality of the situation?
It's unbelievable when you listen to him and listen to his interviews, being interviewed time and time again. And he doesn't give a straight answer. He tells us, oh, we are building houses, but they're not building houses. They're not building social houses. The amount of social housings that have been built in this country over the last number of years under Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael government has been absolutely disgraceful. And Minister Murphy, he just pushes it again, pushes it down the road, hoping it'll go away, or hoping that some magic solution comes around next week and he can add on a few more houses onto his so-called list that the government claims credit for.
All right. Well, what about the high cost of renting in Ireland, and particularly in Dublin? How should this be addressed, in your view?
Well, the high cost of renting in Dublin, unfortunately, there's a lot of restrictions on landlords as to what they can do and what they can't do. And I believe, again, that if there's... We have a rent cap that we can only increase the rents every so often. If that's enforced and run properly, we should put a rent cap on it. And at the end of the day, landlords are trying to make a few bob. They're entitled to make the few bob, but not at the expense of the ordinary decent people. And there should be a rent cap put on rent for, say, a 5-year period. But a decent rent cap that the landlords can say, OK, we can sustain that. And that way, then, people who are renting in those homes can say, we're rest assured for the 5 years, we're grand for the next 5 years. But be assured that at the end of the 5 years, it's not just a free-for-all again, that the government would step in, analyse the situation, and then give their judgment on it at that stage.
Yeah, but one of the regulations is that a landlord is not allowed to refuse those on social welfare and, you know, those that need to go on the HAP scheme. But they get away with it, because what they have thousands of people interested in the one property.
Yeah.
Then they decide who they'll take, right?
Yeah.
Somebody who needs to go on the HAP scheme will say to the agent or the landlord, listen, I need to go on the HAP scheme. Will that be okay with you? And they say, yes, of course, but we'll get back to you. But then they don't get back to them, so they get out of it that way.
Yeah.
There has to be a way to tackle that. Would you agree?
There would have to be a way to tackle that. And I think what could be done is that application forms could be filled in, and that we create a paper trail that the HAP person can follow up on it and say, listen, I was applying for this rent. We went through the different stages and maybe the end of it should be left till the very last. And that way then the applicant would have a paper trail. And if the landlord refused them because they're social welfare tenant, that they could go and they could say, well, we reached this stage in the application and it's clear that when we presented the last form, the HAP form, that the landlord refused us. And that way then they have a paper trail to follow. Whereas at the moment, they don't, because the landlord can just say, look, we'll get back to you once they know that they're HAP.
Okay. What about a rent freeze for over a number of years? Would you agree this is financially viable?
The rent freeze over a couple of years is grand. It sounds fantastic, but it has to be done in relation that it's reasonable. That you can't afford, or you can't expect a landlord to have a rent freeze in a property that he's not making money out of, that he can't sustain it. Like if a landlord is getting X amount and there's not enough in that for him to maintain the property, we're going to go down an area where some of these premises are going to become slums. And we don't want that. It has to be fair on both sides, both the renter and the landlord, that the landlord can maintain the property to a livable standard. And the person has secure tenancy.
Yes, I see where you're coming from. Tell us, Brunchies, about N2's priorities in terms of regional development, infrastructure and so on.
Well, there's an awful lot of infrastructure throughout Ireland that's in the pipeline, but never gets there. Take, for instance, the broadband. I mean, when you think of the broadband to the rural areas and 50 million being spent on it plus... That's going to be handed over to private enterprise at the end of it, where it's funded by public. You have the M3 motorway up to Navan. You have the rail links to Navan that have been in the pipeline for donkey's years. You have the tunnel to the airport. You have the metro to the airport. All these projects are just put on the long finger. And the unfortunate thing about these projects are the government don't seem to be capable of running these programmes or putting them into operation. We've only to look at a National Children's Hospital, the total fiasco that's there and the billions that are being spent when there's no need. It's a total waste of taxpayers' money. And what you have to realise is this waste of money is money that could be put into infrastructure throughout all of Ireland. I'm not just talking about Dublin. I would represent my constituency in Dublin. But as far as I'm concerned, it's a national government. And politicians have to get out of this idea of parish politics, where you live in Dublin, you look after Dublin. You don't. You're part of a national government. And therefore, you would go as far as Donegal and down as far as Kerry and Wexford and look after constituents down there. Because they are the people you represent and the infrastructure that's needed. The west of Ireland is being ignored at the moment. We need infrastructure there. AIM2 has, in the pipeline, we've proposed two new satellite cities that are out in the country, out there. Dublin is overheating at the moment with the housing crisis, etc., etc., and the Andrian infrastructure that's here. If we had two more satellite cities out in the country where we could take the pressure off Dublin and build two cities. We have one up in the northern part of our country, Belfast, and we have Dublin. We need more big centres, more big cities in the country.
Okay. Would you agree that our national, HSE crisis is not solely due to lack of beds, but perhaps, lack of accountability, mismanagement, staff shortages and so on? What's your opinion?
My opinion is we hear on the news every day about A&E overcrowding. It's not overcrowding. It's understaffing. When I look at the frontline staff and you see the nurses and the doctors, it's an absolute disgrace, the long hours that they are working. They are pillars of our society, the doctors and the nurses, like the fire brigade men. But the doctors and the nurses, the hours that they put in and the love and attention that they give to patients. But their hands are tired because we have wards that are closed off, beds that people can't get to. We have long-term care patients taking up hospital beds where they should be moved out of the hospitals when the treatment is finished into secondary care units and free up beds. We have hospital closures all around the country and we're told it was because of the crash. We had to close them down. We're told there's a recovery now. Why hadn't these places opened up? Why hadn't paying conditions been restored for the doctors and the nurses? They need it to be restored. It's a profession. It's not a job for them. You couldn't do what you're doing, what the doctors and nurses are doing, if it's just plainly a job. It's a profession, and they need to be looked after and should be looked after.
Yeah, well, I ask that question because I cannot understand. If you go into St. James's, you would think we don't have a HSE crisis. It's very much better organised. Then you go into our local hospital here in Beaumont.
Correct.
It's like we're in a third world country.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. So to me, that sounds like mismanagement, you know, within the hospital itself and in the HSE. Would you agree?
I wouldn't agree, Johnny. It's total mismanagement. I mean, unfortunately, I had times when I had to go to Beaumont Hospital A&E. And to my shock, I was in there with a patient one time. And it was only when I went beyond the doors. It's okay sitting out in the waiting area. And you could be sitting there 10, 12, 14 hours. And at times, the unfortunate thing is, there could be people there with young children. And you're sitting there till the early hours of the morning, 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, and may not going to be seen till the next change of staff. It's total, total mismanagement where people are not moved on out of the A&E. They don't have the staff. They may have one doctor on, and he's probably out to work in 14 hours. He's tired. He can't do his job properly. He's trying his best. The nurses are trying their best. Talking about the HSE being badly run, I mean, we've only to look at the ridiculous salaries that some of these people are on. They are not performing. If you performed like that in a private enterprise, you'd get your cards, you'd be told to go. But the HSE seems to be, you can't sack anybody. They're there for life. And if you do go to get rid of them, you have to give them a golden handshake and a pension. And they call this, we just say, but this is unjust. No, it's not unjust. That's the contract I was in. And I beg a belief when I hear this, I just say to myself, what were the unions doing all these years that they couldn't have given the nurses and the doctors those contracts? You know, negotiated those contracts that these people were being let go. But it's always the higher echelon in these organisations that seem to get these massive contracts and massive handouts at the end of their tenure, you know?
On a different note, Prunchius, sorry about that. Yeah. Would you agree that Irish unity and development of a strong all-Ireland economy could be a remedy, you know, to the uncertainty of Brexit?
I'm an Irish Republican, and I make no apologies about that. Ireland is a one country. That's why I always refer to the northern part of my country. I don't recognise the state up there, even though it does exist. It's controlled by England at the moment. Never recognised it. It shouldn't be. It'd be like Berlin when it joined together. People said, oh, it's not going to work, it's going to cost too much, etc, etc. You'll have people that'll always try to frighten that off. But a united Ireland will bring economic benefits into this country. You will have massive economic benefits.
Okay. And given the opportunity in government, what would A&2's proposals and, you know, initiatives, what would they be to expedite a united Ireland?
With the united Ireland in place, we would encourage more American companies to come in here, more big multinationals to come in, provided they pay the fair share of tax. And I mean, when you have an equitable tax system in, these companies will not be afraid to come in and support Ireland. We have a lot of friends in America and a lot of big businesses that would come in and support this country in a united Ireland situation.
Our Taoiseach and Fine Gael, they're boasting that employment, jobs and enterprise in Ireland is thriving. What are your views on this? I mean, is our economy really as good as they say?
Well, RTE puts out one spin with the Taoiseach and the Tarnaiste and all. But if you go into the working class areas and ask the people, have they been lifted? They say the tide lifts all boats. The tide doesn't lift all boats. That's what they say. But working class areas, you ask the people, do you feel that you're are you back to where you were? Are your wages back up? Are you paying less tax? And they'll tell you, no, nothing has changed. It's gotten worse. And it has gotten worse under Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government.
Would you be of the view that those on the lower scale is more of a majority compared to those, you know, on the up?
Well, I think there's more and more people slipping into poverty. And we have to see that due to homelessness and people sleeping rough. The homeless crisis and people losing their homes. We don't hear it so much about people losing their homes with these vulture funds and banks, because what the media do is they'll report it for 1 or 2 weeks and then take it off the air, and people just assume it's gone away or it's sorted. Well, it's not sorted. There are still people in this country losing their homes. There are still people becoming homeless every day of the week. When you see the amount of children that had to sleep in hotel rooms for Christmas, not knowing, I know it's funny, but not knowing where Santa, if Santa was even going to find them. No child should have to worry about something like that. It's the government's duty to build affordable and social housing for these people. And if the private enterprise can't provide the houses, the government should get off their arse and do it. And because they support the people, they're run by the people and they're answerable to the people. But at the moment, the government are not answerable to the people. And there's no way that the people can come back. If Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government do something, they can just do it with impunity. Us as a people, we can get out in the street and march. But my attitude is, the government in Leinster House says, what time is that demonstration finished at? I'll be over at 6. Okay, we'll go into the bar, have a few drinks, tell us when they're gone, we can go home. And they ignore these demonstrations. The people have to have an answer, and the answer is to vote for AIM2. Think outside the box. Do not vote the big parties. Get power back to the people, and AIM2 will give power back to the people.
Well, it looks like the majority out there are seeking a change. So tell us, Brunchias, why should the public vote for you as against other candidates in the same constituency? I mean, what gives you the edge above them?
Well, I know. All I can say is speak for myself, that if I was elected to Dáil Éireann, I would work tirelessly and honestly. And that's the big thing, honestly. I would be a champion of the people because I'm coming from the people. I'm not coming from some a silver spoon area of Dublin. I'm coming from a working class area of Dublin, and I would represent the people of Dublin. I felt when I was during the troubles up the north, I was involved as a Republican up there, and it wasn't easy to be a Republican at that time, as we know, with Section 31 of the Broadcasting Act and all that type of stuff. It wasn't easy, but I stood my ground. Like Paddy O'Bean, he's a man of honesty and character, that he was able to stand up and take the hit. We need people like that to represent the people. And I would be one of those people that would stand up and that people could be proud of and say, no, Prunchius and Patter and maybe hopefully other AIM2 candidates get elected, and they'd be able to look to us and say, yes, there's honesty and integrity there, and we can support those people. And if you ask them a direct question, you get a direct answer. I mean, I don't have a script in front of me. I don't even have bullet points in front of me, as you see, Johnny. I speak from the heart, and I speak from the heart, and I give answers. And if I can't give an answer, I will tell the person, I can't give you an answer now, but I will get back to you with an answer. When you see all these debates on television and they're asked questions, all these big politicians are asked questions, none of them give an answer. They talk around in circles, and that infuriates me. If you don't have an answer, say, I'm sorry, I can't answer that at the moment, but I will get back to you. And get back to the people. Give them honesty and the respect that they are due. They have elected you. You are answerable to them.
Couldn't agree more. Just one final question, yep. and a brief answer, because we've actually run out of time.
Yeah.
Let's say, for argument's sake, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil got back in.
Yeah.
And you were elected.
Yeah.
Would you go into government with them if invited?
No.
All right. Okay.
I personally would oppose that. If I could make a difference, if you think back years ago, you're old enough to remember Tony Gregory, God rest him.
I mean,
Tony Gregory held the balance of power at one stage, and he'd done wonders for the inner city. If I was in a situation like that, yes, if I could promote the policies of AIM2 and do some good, and hold the government to ransom in that respect and tightening the reins, yes, I would.
Oh, okay, I got you. Right, so we're going to have to leave it at that, Prunchies. I'm really sorry. From all of us here at Near FM, wishing you the very best of luck on Saturday. And thanks again for joining us, and all the very best to you, and take care.
That's grand, Johnny. Thanks very much.
You're most welcome. Now, that was Prunchies O'Connor, AIM2 Dublin Bay North. He was talking about his general election campaign. And